Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy has given the Catalan regional government 8 days to clarify its intention whether or not to declare independence.
El Consejo de Ministros ha acordado.
He demanded confirmation whether or not independence was declared after regional president Carlos Puigdemont Tuesday declared independence but suspended it pending talks with Madrid. The Catalan government is being given to Monday to respond if independence was declared. It's being given another 3 days to reverse course. Monash University analyst Stuart King said the prime minister, criticized for the police crackdown during the October 1 independence referendum, struck the right tone.
I think it's a very astute move on the part of the central government in a response to what was a very ambiguous statement from in the Catalan Parliament.
Carlos Rivadulla, president of the Association of Catalan Businessmen, said Wednesday he believes he knows why the Catalan leader did not outright declare independence.
Probably one of the main reasons why yesterday regional president did not declare directly and forward independence was the pressure from the business corporate community. It was a big signal they sent last week, starting last week, when many of the biggest companies in Catalonia left the region because of the political instability.
Under the Constitution, Spain can dismiss the Catalan government, impose direct rule, and call for new elections. Kenya's electoral board says all 8 candidates from the annulled August 8 presidential election will be able to take part in the repeat poll October 26, including main opposition candidate Raila Odinga, despite his decision to withdraw. Meanwhile, police fired tear gas on protesters Wednesday. Several people were injured as thousands took to the streets, demanding electoral reform in Kenya. This is VOA News. In Northern California, the death toll is now at 21 as firefighters, faced with high winds and low humidity, battle out-of-control fires that have destroyed homes and businesses. Hundreds are missing and unaccounted for. More than 20 blazes have scorched nearly 70,000 hectares across 9 counties since Sunday. Jerry Brown is the state's governor.
We've had big fires in the past. This is one of the biggest, most serious. It's not over.
The Sonoma County city of Santa Rosa is one of the hardest hit areas, with blocks of neighborhoods virtually obliterated by fire. Ken Pimlott is the director of CAL FIRE.
While we yesterday had a brief respite from the winds, we have returned today to red flag conditions, very dry humidities, 8% in many locations, and winds that are surfacing out of the north. In some places, 40 miles an hour.
Firefighters are struggling to strengthen fire containment lines to fight the high winds. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis said the military is considering changes in the wake of last week's ambush in Niger that killed 4 U.S. service personnel carried out by a suspected Islamic State affiliate. Mattis said the attack occurred in an area where the enemy has not operated before. The patrol was hit hard. It's reported some 40 U.S. and Nigerian troops were attacked by militants riding vehicles, including motorcycles. President Donald Trump is to announce this week whether he will decertify Iran's compliance with the 2015 Iran nuclear agreement, giving Congress 60 days to decide whether to reimpose sanctions. Republican Congressman Ed Royce chairs the House Foreign Affairs Committee.
As flawed as the deal is, I believe we must now enforce the hell out of it. Let's work with allies to make certain that international inspectors have better access to possible nuclear sites, and we should address the fundamental sunset shortcoming, as our allies have recognized.
Mr. Trump faces an October 15 decision whether or not to certify Iran is in compliance. The Kurdistan Regional Government in northern Iraq warned Wednesday Baghdad is preparing what it called a major attack in the oil-rich region of Kirkuk. Baghdad denies it insists its target is Islamic State fighters to the west. Tensions are high since Iraqi Kurds voted for independence in last month's referendum. Iraqi courts, meanwhile, issued arrest warrants for members of the Kurdish Electoral Commission who organized that vote. Zambia said emergency measures imposed by President Edgar Lungu earlier this year will expire. The emergency powers were invoked July 5 following a series of arson fires in the wake of the detention of the main opposition leader, Hakainde Hichilema, on treason charges. Buoyed by strong corporate earnings, Wall Street ended Wednesday at another record high, the benchmark Dow Jones Index gaining more than 40 to close at 22,872. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 12, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The Zambian government has decided not to renew a three-month-old state of emergency.
The state of emergency was in the first place wrongly pronounced, and it has inconvenienced to people for nothing, because in this 90 days when we had the state of emergency, not even one terrorist has been arrested.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for Zambia's main opposition, UPND. Togo's opposition coalition vows to continue its protests despite a government ban on demonstrations. Amnesty International criticized the Togo's government for its crackdown on dissent. And the protest for electoral reform leaves many injured in clashes with Kenyan police.
You cannot have a situation where you just shoot aimlessly at helpless people who are not even involved in the demonstrations. And Kisumu now has become like the Wild West, where people are learning to shoot.
Moses Odingo is the father of one of 17 people injured yesterday in Kisumu. A 15-year-old girl and two women have gone missing from a UN protection of civilian site in South Sudan. And the World Health Organization warns of child obesity epidemic. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Zambian government on Wednesday decided not to renew a state of emergency, which it imposed 3 months ago during the political turmoil that followed the imprisonment of Hakainde Hichilema, the leader of the opposition United Party for National Development, UPND. The measure was set to expire at midnight Wednesday. Justice Minister Gavin Lubinda warned citizens not to take advantage of the decision not to renew the state of emergency. UPND spokesman Charles Kakoma says the state of emergency should never have been imposed in the first place. He says the measure was imposed simply to intimidate opposition supporters.
The UPND and many Zambians think that the state of emergency was in the first place wrongly pronounced, and it has inconvenienced to people for nothing, because in this 90 days when we had the state of emergency, not even one terrorist has been arrested. So it was just an abuse of the law.
After your leader, Hakainde Hichilema, was put in jail, you know there were fires, people boycotting demonstrations. So in a sense, you would say maybe the government was right to impose the state of emergency.
No, they were wrong. We all knew that all those incidences of fires and so on were state-sponsored. And this is not the first time that is happening in our country. Even in the olden days when we had a one-party state, they used to do that. They would start fires, they would start bombs going up here and there. That's to implicate the opposition. We knew that this is the same method or scheme that they were using.
Mr. Kakoma, can it be said that the government is willing now to meet you, the opposition, halfway as a way forward for Zambia?
Well, they should not even meet us halfway. They should meet us in full. We want to meet them to negotiate everything, including hearing our presidential election petition. There is no way we can agree that they should stop our election petition when the law was not followed. That can't happen.
That is not a way forward, because the election is over and President Lungu is the president of Zambia.
Well, we believe that he was elected with a lot of electoral irregularities. And if those irregularities are to be subjected to a court process, he probably not be president.
I understand your leader, Hakainde Hichilema. He had a news conference Wednesday. What did he have to say at the news conference?
Basically, the president of the UPND, President Hakainde Hichilema, was informing the nation about the issues that we want to be discussed at the dialogue sponsored by the Commonwealth. They itemized more than 15 items that we want to be discussed, including issues to do with the restoration of fundamental rights and freedoms of the people as enshrined in our constitution. Right now, from the time we came from prison, we cannot even be allowed to hold a rally, a meeting. The Public Order Act is so draconian, so selective in its application that he's more or less a prisoner up to now. He can't organize his party.
South African President Jacob Zuma, my understanding is that he's due in Zambia on Thursday. Is that true? And any comment from the opposition UPND?
Well, we have just seen those reports on social media. We're actually surprised that he's coming to Zambia. We don't know why he's coming here. The last time he came, when President Hakainde Hichilema was in prison, he was non-committal about helping Zambia in terms of achieving democracy. So we do not know why he's coming now.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. At least 17 people have been admitted to hospital for injuries sustained Wednesday in the opposition stronghold of Kisumu as demonstrators demanding electoral reform in Kenya clashed with police who denied using live bullets. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Lucas Otieno is in pain and his bed is soaked in blood. The 24-year-old boat welder says he was caught in the Wednesday demonstrations in Kisumu in western Kenya on his way to work. Before I got to my place of work, I met police officers at the bridge. They started throwing tear gas, then people started running. I stopped at the Kondele market, then I felt pain. I touched, then I saw blood. A bullet hit his genitals and lodged in his groin. He says, Otieno's father, Moses Odingo, is angered by his son's injuries.
You cannot have a situation where you just shoot aimlessly at helpless people who are not even involved in the demonstrations. And Kisumu now has become like the Wild West, where people are learning to shoot.
Opposition supporters clash with police in the Kondele area in Kisumu County. Families of the injured and protesters have accused the police of using live bullets to quell the riots. An accusation denied by the police. In the main hospital in Kisumu, few doctors and nurses are available to attend to the injured, some of whom have been here for hours without treatment. Eloko Thiamba, who sells second-hand clothes, says police assaulted him at his place of work. I was hiding in my shop. Police were chasing some of the demonstrators, and they realized someone was hiding in the shop. They entered and started beating me with a baton. They broke my left hand and I have not got treatment. I was told to come back tomorrow. Odhiambo was one of the dozens of injured waiting for treatment at the biggest hospital. Dr. Juliana Otieno works at the Jaramogi Odinga Hospital. She says they have received patients with serious injuries.
There were 23, by 6:30, and three were gone. The rest were other injuries. Three were gunshots, the rest were other injuries. Yeah, there were treatment. One or two was to go to theatre, so they were still being prepared. The gunshots are the ones that were to go to theatre.
Political tensions continue to climb in Kenya ahead of the rerun presidential election on October 26th. Opposition supporters took to the streets of major cities Wednesday to demand that electoral officials who were blamed for irregularities in the August election step down immediately. On Tuesday, opposition leader and presidential candidate Raila Odinga pulled out of the October polls, citing grievances with the Electoral Commission and President Uhuru Kenyatta's ruling party. The opposition has vowed to continue with the protest till their demands are met. Opposition supporters say they will take to the streets for more demonstrations. But for Lucas Otieno, the welder, a long night awaited him at the hospital as doctors prepare to remove the bullet. He likely has a long road to recovery ahead. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Kisumu, Kenya.
Listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America, I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 12th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's send shout out to listeners on these our VOA affiliate stations: Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, and Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Togo's 14-party opposition coalition says it will continue its demonstrations calling for the resignation of President Faure Gnassingbé. This despite a government ban on opposition protests on weekdays, Monday through Friday, because it said such protests have been violent. The government said opposition protests could only be held on Saturdays and Sundays. Kojo Delava is Secretary General of Togo's main opposition National Alliance for Change Party. He says the next protest planned for October 18 will go ahead as scheduled because the government cannot ban what the Constitution allows.
This ban is an illegal ban. The government can't ban what the Constitution allows and what our main law regarding free demonstration allows. So the coalition is not agree with this ban, and it maintains its demonstration schedule for this coming Wednesday.
But why can't you hold the demonstration on Saturday or on Sunday? Because the government says that if you are protesting during the week, that creates the possibility of violence.
This is a kind of abuse the government is committing. It's an abuse of power. And in any part of the world, you can't force people to demonstrate at a given day. This is just an abuse from this Togolese government.
Why do you want to march to the offices of the Economic Community of West African States?
You know, our international community, ECOWAS, OEF, some other organization are taking position as usual to protect the dictatorship. And Togolese people cannot accept anymore this situation. We want ECOWAS to take position in favor of justice, in favor of fairness, and not to protect the dictatorship.
You want to end the regime or the leadership of the Nasimwe family. People say, yeah, why can't you do it through an election?
They are ruling more than 50 years of oppression. Enough is enough. It's not the political party who wanted to end this regime. They are Togolese people who want to end the regime. It's a popular movement, a popular demonstration. Togolese people are in the streets and they want the constitution they had voted for some 25 years ago.
Your coalition, do you plan to meet with this international organization of La Francophone that is supposed to be in Togo? Are you going to meet with them?
Well, as a matter of fact, the coalition refused to meet the mission. The coalition didn't have anything against this organization, but there is a lot to say about the leader of this mission, who is a lady whose name is Aisha Tumin Daoudou, who, together with Mr. Ibrahim Chambas, at that time, both of them were acting on behalf of the ECOWAS. And they play a very, very bad role in the hard situation we went through as the dictator Nyasimbe Eyadema passed away back to February 205. They came here and didn't take into account what the political parties want, what the population wants, and they just came here to protect the regime.
Kodjo Deleva is Secretary General of Togo's main opposition National Alliance for Change Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lomé. The Togolese government this week announced a ban on protests during the week, just after the opposition announced plans for a rally next week. Amnesty International researcher Francois Patoul tells Ricky Shryak this violation of the right to peaceful assembly is just one in a long list of efforts by the authorities to crack down on critics.
This is really the latest crackdown on the protests organized by opposition groups. You know, there's already been killings during those demonstrations, and there's been a number of internet shutdowns already. It's basically a ban on all the marches organized by the opposition to organize marches during the work days, during business days. And this constitutes violation of the right to peaceful assembly.
Why is the opposition in Togo marching? Why are tensions elevated in Togo?
The opposition has been marching since August, calling for constitutional changes, but also for the president to resign. There's been already a crackdown on these protests. At least 4 people have been killed during these protests, including 2 miners who were killed by gunshot. There's been excessive use of force by the security forces who are dispersing demonstrators with tear gas, live ammunition, batons, and there's been a number of casualties, but also, you know, dozens of people being injured across the country. The second way the authorities have been cracking down on those protests is by suspending, shutting down the internet. This has happened twice already. It happened for about 6 days during protests at the beginning of September and during 3 days in mid-September. And this has really prevented the human rights defenders who were monitoring the demonstrations, but also journalists who were monitoring the demonstrations, to report on what was happening, including, you know, instances of excessive use of force by the demonstrators. We had people observing the demonstrations, and they were not able to send us videos or photos of what was happening.
There is a draft constitutional bill that would change the Togolese constitution. What are those proposed changes, and what does this have to do with the uptick in opposition activity?
Well, the opposition has been saying that the constitutional reform are not going far enough, and this is why the constitutional reforms suggested are not going far enough, and that they want to see President Faure leaving. I mean, this is the objective of the demonstrations. For Amnesty, what matters is that the people should be able to organize peaceful protests, including during work days, and that it's the responsibility of the authorities to ensure that this right is respected and protected. They should ensure that there is no excessive use of force during demonstrations. They should pledge or they should commit to not shutting down the internet anymore, and they should protect the right to peaceful assembly in general.
That was Francois Patouille, Amnesty International West Africa researcher. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. Community leaders at a UN Protection of Civilians site in Juba say a 15-year-old girl and 2 women who went out to collect firewood are still missing 3 days after being abducted by men in military uniform. One woman who escaped during the ordeal says the 3 women were kidnapped in broad daylight about 3 kilometers from the UN camp. Tito Justin reports from Juba.
The UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, says the missing females returned to the UN Protection of Civilian site on Tuesday. But a community leader says that is not true. Juba community leaders at the POC site say 3 of 16 women who went to collect firewood 3 kilometers outside the site on Sunday were rounded up by 20 men in uniform. They say armed men took 3 women and a 15-year-old girl and feed one of the abducted women on Monday. Bom Kubong Gatop, who lives at the POC site, says the security of IDPs outside the UN camp is always a problem.
Especially the female who used to move out to collect firewood, as long as there's no unwilling organizations to provide charcoal. That means if the women move away from here to collect firewood in the forest, the problem will happen. As it happens now.
An eyewitness at the POC site says the woman who was released by armed men fell sick and received a treatment at International Medical Corps Clinic within the POC. The whereabouts of the other 2 women and the girl is still unknown. The woman who escaped during the attack says she was able to run away when the gunman appeared. For private concerns and her security, we will only refer to her by her first name, Martha. Speaking native Nweri language, Martha says IDPs have no source of affordable energy for cooking in the camp, so women must venture outside the perimeters of the camp to collect firewood.
When we went to look for firewood and charcoal, many people came. They have guns and are in military uniforms. When some of us saw them, we ran. That's why you can see us here. What happened last time was really something deadly.
A bag of charcoal sells for 4,000 South Sudanese pounds at the UN Protection of Civilians site in Juba. At that price, many IDPs say they cannot afford to buy charcoal for cooking meals. Women in the camp often gather in groups of 10 to 20 each afternoon to look for firewood. The latest attack has created panic in the camp. Martha says aid agencies should provide free charcoal for IDPs at the POC site.
I am telling those helping us that our problem here of charcoal and firewood should be resolved. They can help us transport them within the camps because outside the fence of POC is not safe.
Earlier this year, UNMISS said it improved security around the camp, especially in Jebel where the abduction took place. In an email response, UNMISS spokesman Daniel Dixon says UNMISS has not received any confirmed reports of an abduction and or rape of three women and a girl outside the protection of civilian site on Sunday. Nearly 38,500 South Sudanese are sheltering at UNMISS protection of civilian sites in Juba. Many of them fled their homes in 2013 when deadly fighting erupted in Juba between the South Sudan Army and supporters of former First Vice President Riek Machar. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
A new study shows there has been a huge increase in the number of obese and overweight children around the world in just a couple of generations. In one of the biggest epidemiological studies ever undertaken, scientists found dramatic transformations in many parts of the world. Henry Richwell has more from London.
The study by the World Health Organization and Imperial College London analyzed height and weight measurements of 130 million people to determine their body mass index, or BMI. The results were stark. In just four decades, since 1975, there has been a tenfold increase in childhood and adolescent obesity. It is a global problem. But the most dramatic changes have occurred in middle-income countries in East Asia, the Middle East and North Africa and Latin America. Lead author Professor Majid Edzati.
So places that a few decades ago there may have been very little obesity and a fair amount of underweight suddenly are having bordering epidemics.
In higher income countries, rates of childhood obesity have plateaued but remain very high. In this income group, the United States had the highest obesity rates. Researchers say the global epidemic is a result of food marketing and policy making across the globe.
Rather than sort of being an individual's choice, it's how the environments that people choose their foods, healthy foods being priced out of reach and especially out of the reach of poor, and unhealthy foods being marketed aggressively together with perhaps not having the safe playing area for children that are leading to weight gain.
Obesity is an underlying cause of many diseases later in life, including heart disease, stroke, diabetes and some cancers. But it also has a big impact in childhood.
So it's associated with the stigma, so psychosocial consequences for the children. There is some evidence that it actually affects educational outcome of the children.
The study also looked at the number of underweight children, which still represents a major health challenge, especially in the poorest parts of the world. India had the highest prevalence of moderately and severely underweight young people.
We really need to deal with the two issues at the same time. So we can't wait to deal with underweight and then worry about overweight and obesity. The transition happens really fast, and they are all different forms of malnutrition.
The report's authors are calling for policymakers to find ways to make healthy, nutritious food more available at home and school, especially in poorer families and communities, alongside higher taxes on unhealthy foods. Henry Richwell for VOA News, London.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The Zambian government Wednesday decided not to renew a state of emergency, which it imposed 3 months ago during the political turmoil that followed the imprisonment of Hakainde Hichilema, the leader of opposition United Party for National Development, UPND. The measure was set to have expired at midnight Wednesday. And that is it for this Thursday, October 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckfro, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butter in Washington, wishing you a very lovely day.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa, at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.